Hi, everybody. It's Tuesday. This is for the second week in a row. Rabbi Rafi Shokut has been gracious enough to switch with me and in our places. So instead of Monday, Pirkei Avot, Tistri, and Hashkafa, we're doing it today. Next week, Emirat Hashem, we're going back to normal, and this class will be on Monday. I want to remind you, I don't think I often do it enough. This class, for over a year now, has been sponsored and supported and broadcast by the Tel Aviv International Synagogue Daily Torah Study Group, and under the inspired leadership of Rabbi Aro Constantine. I urge you to join the Daily Study Group. There are all kinds of wonderful, wonderful shiurim in English and in Hebrew and in French, and a vast potpourri of intellectual and spiritual inspiration. And I really, really urge you to join the group. It's an international group. The questions are amazing. They come from all over the world, and it's important to support the very important work of Rabbi Constantine and his synagogue. Okay, so that is number one. We are now proceeding through that same Mishnah. This is chapter 2 in Pirkei Avot, Mishnah 5. I think it's Mishnah 5. Yeah. You're sure you'll know me by now that I'm not that great at numbers. Mishnah Dalet, Mishnah 4. It's one of these cases where every single line in the Mishnah has resonance and deserves to be addressed on its own. So the line that we're up to is, and we'll see in a minute, this is not necessarily the way it actually reads, Al Tomar Davar She'ief Shalishmoa. This is attributed to Hillel Hazaken, who lived at the end of the first millennia BCE and the beginning of the first millennium CE. Al Tomar Davar She'ief Shalishmoa Shesof Alishtam Hilishamea. Don't say anything that should not be heard. That's a simple understanding. Or that people should not hear, or that it's forbidden to be heard. Shesofa lishamea, because in the end, it'll end up, the secret will out. So on the face of it, this is one of these typically self-evident wise sayings that are pretty obvious. You know, keep secret. In other words, don't tell somebody. Don't tell somebody something in confidence, or if you have someone tell you something in confidence, don't sit there and spread it around. You're not supposed to. If somebody tells you something in confidence, you're supposed to keep that confidence. To violate a person's confidence is not just to violate your relationship; is to really violate the other person. It's an act of torts of sorts. And in the end, there's no such thing as a friend of mine once put it, I can keep a secret. It's the people I tell that can't keep secrets. Okay. That's a silly way to put it, but it's very true. That's a self-evident, obvious meaning. What's striking is that it has been addressed and interpreted in so many different ways. And I've told you many, many times that many of the Mishnayot, many of the passages, many of the sentences in Pirkei Avot, as much as they are eternally valuable, and they are, they reflect the mirror of the concerns of the commentators who made their observations about those lines. So, for example, one group of commentators clearly were reflecting circumstances in which Jews were forced to go underground in their observance. And they said, "Al tavar tomar davar she'ef shalishmoa." Don't do anything. The walls have ears. Don't do or say anything which could compromise the safety of other Jews. This would be relevant, of course, during the Shoah. It would be relevant during the periods of religious persecution, when Jews had to take their Judaism underground. Al tomar davar she'ef shalishmoa. Be very careful about what you say, because at the end of the day, it may turn out that as innocent as what you are saying might seem to be, you may very well be betraying a confidence and betraying somebody's lives. That line of interpretation of this statement by Hillel is often invoked when circumstances that the Jews found themselves were less than optimal, especially when they were under persecution of this sort or the other. The truth of the matter is, however, that even in less dramatic circumstances, it's a fact that different people they read the same words and they saw them as if they meant something totally, totally different. It's stunning what they come up with. So, for example, Maimonides says, "Al tovar davar she'ef shar lishmoa." Don't say something which is impossible to hear or which one shouldn't hear. What do you mean, impossible to hear? The Rambam here means, don't say something stupid. You're not allowed to make yourself look dumb. You're not allowed to make yourself look immoral. You're not allowed to make yourself look impolite. Don't say anything which is going to reflect badly on you. If you're going to say something, say it with dignity. Say it with clarity. Say it in a manner. Using profanity would be would come in here. We in our society, we've turned profanity into some kind of a mitzvah. But the truth of the matter is that the proper use of language, as far as Judaism is concerned, is one which is incredibly incredibly careful. Not just in terms, we talked about extremes, but also very careful in terms of what used to be called clean language. The Talmud says explicitly in the beginning of Tractate Pesachim, there's a statement that says that just to teach you how careful you should be in the way that you express yourself, that even though it's a dogmatic principle that the Torah form, I'm talking about here in terms of the Pentateuch, in terms of the Bible, expresses itself in the most careful and cautious fashion. It never uses spare words. It's always very, very sparing in the way it expresses itself, trying to cram as much information and meaning into as few words as possible. When it came to teach the average person that that one should express oneself with what the Gemara calls lashon nekiya, to speak with clean language. Instead of saying that Noah was supposed to bring behemat meya, an unclean animal, it says behema asher enena tahora, an animal which is not pure. Now, of course, the Torah uses the word tmeya, but the point was in this specific context to teach us a different lesson. The Torah went out of its way to teach us al tumar davar she'i efshar lishmoa, shesofo lehishameya. But don't say something, don't speak in a way which is really unintelligible or improper or evoke a negative response from people. Because at the end, that's what's going to happen. Your message will be the media, to invert Marshall McLuhan, which I may be dating myself, but he did say something smart. So that's Maimonides, interestingly. And then he goes on, Maimonides, and he says, it's not just that. Sophisticated is not the word. Don't be overly vague. I know that's another thing that we do today. We don't want to take responsibility for our words. Like, no, it's this, it's that. Don't be overly vague. And don't say things in such a way that you're going to require an entire seminar of wise people to sit there and figure out what you said, because they might get it wrong, and then they will impute to you things which you did not intend in the first place. Clarity of self-expression, to be speaking unilaterally, in the case of being straightforward and taking responsibility for your words. Al tomar davar she'ef shalishmo asher sofo lishamea, because what you want is you want people to understand you. And if you obfuscate, if you just, to say too much and don't make things clear, they'll not only judge you, but you will end up getting yourself in trouble And you can't say you didn't say these things. Yes, you can, these games of, oh, that it was taken out of context and all this other baloney, but it's baloney. We all know it's a baloney. We know when somebody goes and tweets, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, when somebody goes and tweets, he says X, all right, and the whole world comes out of him, the Twitter mob wants to come and kill him. Okay, you say, well, it was taken out of context, I didn't mean it, it was this, it was that, it was the other thing. So my mommy says, don't start. Al tomar davar she'efshar lishmor she'sofo le'yishmea. What should you do? What should you do is the exact opposite of what we do. What you should do is weigh every single word. Send, tweet, post after you've thought things through, after you've written it out, after you've read it twice. Adrenaline, and on the one hand, is the enemy of cogency, clarity, and morality. Or, as a friend of mine put it, "Al tiyeh kol kach maher im etzba kala al hasend." Don't be so quick to press the send button, because once it's out there, you can never get it back. "Al tomar davar she'efshar lishmoa," because when you push the send button or the tweet button or the post button, she'sofo li'yishmea. Once it's out there, you no longer have any control. It's like throwing a ball. Let it go, and there'll always be somebody with a, and you'll be responsible. There's always be somebody with a screenshot, it'll come back to haunt you, and it's unnecessary. Al tomar davar she'efshar lishmoa she'sofo li'yishmea. And it's interesting. I'm quoting you medievals. So apparently, you know, we think that we're such hotshots that we live in the world of technology, but apparently the problems of, you know, flying off the collar or shooting your mouth off or speaking without before thinking, it's generic. We just do it at faster speed. Words are the only way we have to communicate in terms of ideas. So therefore, they really require that we respect ourselves and respect those who are receiving them. Of course, there's another. There are those who, for example, one of the Spanish medieval commentators mentions that, you know what, most of Pirkei Avot, as far as he's concerned, refers to Torah study. First, the Torah study. Not necessarily, Maimonides would have it, many of the actually Spanish authorities would have it, that the Pirkei Avot is actually sort of an ethical guidebook for judges. And that's the reason why. I mean, why is Pirkei Avot? Pirkei Avot is all ethics. So why is it sitting there in the middle of Seder Nezikin? Seder Nezikin, that part of the Mishnah where you find it, addresses questions of law. It's about the torts and civil law and criminal law and procedure and witnesses and courts and all kinds of what happens when judges make a mistake and on and on and on. What's it doing there? So Maimonides says, and then Rabbi Menachem and Meiri, who is in the 14th century, says as well, no, the reason why it's there is because judges have to realize that they are not God, and that they are subject to the law, and they are also subject to ethics. And the ethics are not from within them, but rather they are imposed. They are what's called, there's a fancy word for you, you use it at a cocktail party, ecthonymous ethics. In other words, the Torah imposes an ethical system on the judges. The judges can't just sit there and say, well, it seems to me, and that's all there is. No, a judge has to balance his, at least in halacha, has to balance his insight and his judgment and his knowledge against standards that are within which he is supposed to function. Again, it's supposed to lead to humility. One of the reasons why one of the major themes of Pirkei Avot is humility. So along this line, there are those who understand this line, this statement, "Al tomar davar she'efshar lishmor she'sofo li'yishmea." When you teach Torah, and you know what? We all teach Torah. It's not just rabbis. It's not just rabbaniyot. We all teach Torah. Everybody who is involved in Torah study will pass on to somebody else what they believe. and what they know. It might be, you know, it might just be in a conversation. It, whatever the case might be, we are all out there spreading Torah to the degree we can. So that this admonition is good for, yes, it's good for professionals, but it's good for every Jew who's interested in Torah. And, I mean, I know it from being here, from living in Israel for so many, many years. You know, you get free Torah from all kinds of places. I was in Netanya, and I walked into a hardware store. My kids were moving from one apartment to the other, and they needed bubble paper. So we didn't get bubble paper. I don't know. I don't live in Netanya. So somebody said, go over here. Go, this guy, he has it. Okay. So I walk in, and okay. So the guy sitting there is a guy without a kippah, and we're talking about all kinds of stuff. And I noticed on the wall he's got a picture of Baba Sali, who was a famous Moroccan sage and mystic and saint, and a picture of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I said, well, that's an interesting combination. Why do you have their pictures there? He says, well, he's Moroccan, and he knew Baba Sali, and so on. And he says, "But and also I go every week, I study Tanya with this Lubavitch rabbi in Netanya. And then this guy, without a kippah, I would never have thought, whatever, he's sitting there telling us all kinds of stuff over from the Tanya, which, of course, is the foundational text of Lubavitch Chassidut. By the way, I must tell you, before, this is an unsolicited ad, but I'm going to tell you anyways. Yesterday was the first anniversary of Rav Adin Steinsaltz, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. I heard his son, who I'm proud to count among my friends, Rabbi many, say that Rabbi Steinsaltz's goal was to place in the hands of every single Jew the five works, not books, but the five works that he felt should be in every Jewish home and should be required for Jewish literacy. So one is, he did a parish on Aleph Tanakh, all the whole Bible. He did a commentary on the whole Talmud, which is where the whole thing started. He did a commentary on the Rambam, on Maimonides, that's Tanakh, Gemara, he did one on the whole Mishnah, which is just coming out, and on the Tanya. As Lubavitcher Chosid, he thought that the Tanya should be in everybody's home. Now, the books have been finished, they're all published in Hebrew, and now they're coming out in English. So that those of you for whom Hebrew is still a challenge, although everybody should learn Hebrew, or try, it should be available to everybody. Why did I mention this? Lost my thought. Okay. Anyways. I know. So the point is that everybody should study. Everybody should share their great Torah. You don't have to be we'll see that in a minute. You don't have to be the world's greatest scholar to share the great Torah. Says Maimonides, not Maimonides, says one of the other Sephardic commentaries. However, when you teach, be sure you understand what you're teaching. Be sure that you have it clearly in your mind, you understand it, because you represent the Torah. You represent the Torah. Since you represent the Torah, you've got to make sure that at least you understand it to the best of your ability, because once you tell someone else, that will have ramifications. Al tomar davar she'ef shalishmoa. Don't make the Torah look dumb, or don't say anything half-baked. Shesofoli shamea, because somebody's going to hear it, and then they're going to understand or misunderstand, and that can create misunderstandings. It can create all kinds of problems, and in fact can be, in the cases of rabbis who make statements, and rabbis unfortunately make all kinds of half-baked statements, usually in public policy, and sometimes in terms of psak halacha also, because rabbis impregnable, good. Rabbis aren't infallible, okay? We don't believe in infallibility. There's no such doctrine in Jewish, in normative Judaism. And don't talk to me about that story. We'll talk about it another time, maybe. Human beings make mistakes, so at least try to prevent the mistakes, because shesofo lehishamea, there is a long term, You could, if you do davar she'ef shalishmoa, if you share dvar Torah in the right circumstance, in the right way, so foli shameh, you could do an incredible kiddush Hashem. You could be transformative in another person's life. I just heard there's a podcast that's put out by the rapper Nissim Black, who lives, I think he lives in Beit Shemesh now. He used to live in whatever, with Amir Stoudemire, who's a basketball coach, famous NBA basketball coach. Both of them are Gerei Tzedek. And what was striking about the conversation on the podcast, the name of the podcast is The Deal. I highly recommend it. It's really very intriguing and very good. In which I think it was Nissim Black is telling Amir Stoudemire that he said, you know, you're such an inspiration to me because I watched the way you studied and I watched the way you imbibed Torah. Which brings us to, so perhaps the flip side of what I've just said to you could actually lead a person to say, so what do I need this for? Maybe if I have a Torah insight, if I know something, maybe I'll hold back. Maybe I won't tell anybody. I might get it wrong. Not allowed to do that either. And of all the people who addressed this aspect or this flip side of the same Mishnah, I was stunned. I was really, really stunned to find out it was Rav Chaim Volozhin. Rav Chaim Volozhin, the founder of, I quote his commentary on Avot not infrequently here, Rav Chaim Volozhin, who the founder of really the first modern yeshiva, in the sense of an independent institution with a board. It wasn't dependent on a community, and so on. That's a modern invention. Previously, there were always yeshivot, but the yeshivot were attached to a specific scholar who was usually attached to a community. Here you're talking about an institution of higher Jewish learning, which is bigger than the staff, the faculty, and also the students. Rosh Yeshiva come, they come and go. Whereas previously, the yeshiva either was just the circle of the students of a great man, or something that was found that was supported and controlled by the local community. In any event, on this issue, says Rav Chaim Volozhin, he says. He actually says it a little later, but he says, never be afraid of studying Torah. Never say, I'm not worthy. Never say, I need to prepare myself. Never say, I sinned, I was a terrible person, I have to really get my spiritual health in order, and my spiritual head in order, and my soul in order, and I have to do all kinds of stuff to get myself ready. And then when that's all set, when I put everything in order, then I can sit and study. Says Rav Chaim Volozhin, it doesn't work that way. He quotes actually the next line, which we'll talk about next time. Don't say, I'll get to it when I'm ready, because you might never get ready. Says Reb Chaim Volozhin, he says, you know, when you study, or opening a sefer, it doesn't matter which one, is the first step to recovery. Acknowledging that you need to learn is the first step to being a Talmud Chacham or a Talmidei Chachamah. The act of studying Torah will by itself put you on the right path. It will lead to observance. It will lead to moral clarity. It will lead to moral self-improvement. It will lead one close to God. While involved, that's what makes one person. So, Altamai Dabarshi Yef Shalish Shmoa, yes. Be responsible, shesofoli shamea, but that doesn't mean don't get involved at all. You have to know how to balance yourself. You have to know yourself. And if you think about it 3, 4, 5 times, say, ah, sounds right, then you go. Along the same line, statement by a very intriguing person who's not well known. His name is Rabbi Matityahu Hayitzhari. He lived at the end of the 14th century, early 15th century. He himself was a person whose career was, very stormy. He lived at a time, he was an eyewitness to the nationwide anti-Jewish attacks. I don't like to use the word pogrom because pogroms are sort of anachronistic. Mm-hmm. But the nationwide attacks against the Jews of Spain in 1391, they started in Castile and they spread through the entire country. They spread out of Castile and into Aragon. Thousands of Jews were killed, murdered. Tens of thousands of Jews were forced to convert to Christianity. It really was the first step in the decline that led to the ultimate expulsion 100 years later of the Jews from Spain. I think I mentioned this last week. As part of the church's ongoing attempt to literally break the back of the Jews of Spain, the Pope, or the anti-Pope, I should say, organized a year-and-a-half disputation in the city of Tortosa in Aragon, during which he was going to prove to the Jews that actually the Talmud is a Christian document and you can prove the truth of Christianity from the Talmud. That's for another how that works is another is for another topic. But what he did was to basically round up the entire intellectual leadership of the Jews of Spain, especially of Aragon, keep them in Tortosa to debate two Jewish apostates, or one Jewish apostate and his supporters. This way he kept the rabbis and the leaders and the educators out of circulation while Dominican and Franciscan monks went through the countryside, whipped up the populace to riot against the Jews and to force them to convert. And there was no one, because they were all, effectively on house arrest under house arrest in Tortosa, the Jews were sitting ducks. One of the rabbis who was kept under house arrest at the time in Tortosa was Rabbi Matityahu Yitzhari. It's another one who you might have heard of. Ended up becoming more famous. His name is Rabbi Yosef Albo. Rabbi Joseph Albo. He wrote a book of Jewish dogmatics, in other words, the basics of Jewish belief, called the Sefer HaIkarim. It's a fairly famous book of Jewish ethics and philosophy. Anyways, Rabbi Matityahu Yitzhari, when he approaches this Mishnah, apparently his version of the Mishnah was different. And he saw in it something very, very different than which we've discussed so far. Rabbi Matityahu Yitzhari's text read, Al Tomar Davar She'efshar Lishmoa She'sofo Lishmoa. Now, it's a very clumsy kind of formulation in the text, but how does he understand it? He understands it this way. He says, there are people, Efshar Lishmoa, something which is understandable. He said, don't tell yourself that something self-evident. What do I have to study this for? What do I have to listen to this guy for? He's teaching me Aleph Bet. He's teaching me ABCs. She'sofo Lishmoa, somebody else will say it. Now, what could this mean? It could be simply an act of whatever. So you might think something is self-evident. You might be very smart. Think something's self-evident. Say, nah, I don't have to say that. But in the end, it might be something worth sharing. And in the end, somebody else might say it. In other words, you might get scooped. Don't get scooped. That's one way of looking at it. But that's not the way he understood it. He said, don't treat what other people have to say with condescension. Study from everybody. She'sofo Lishmoa, meaning that in the end it'll come out that this is an important thing to know, and you're going to be caught up short. Learn from everyone. Now, I know this topic has come up a lot. The enemy of Torah is arrogance, because arrogance is a form of self-worship, and self-worship is a form of avodah zarah, and avodah zarah is a crime. We worship God, not ourselves. Furthermore, and here are, I'm going to let my imagination, my wild imagination, just sort of like fly. But I wonder, is that statement a result of his experience at Tortosa? Is it possible that he went into this debate with an apostate, a person who converted Christianity, whose name was Yehoshua Halorki, he changed his name to Jerome of the Sacred Faith, Hieronymus de Sancta Fide. Did he go in arrogantly unprepared and discover that in the end he should have listened to other people and not just relied on himself? Was he dismissive of what he could have learned from other people? And did he pay a price? Well, whatever it is, the lesson, as you see from these just few words, Al tomar davar she'i efshar lishmo she'sofo lishamea, have ramifications in every single part of our lives. And we will see you next Monday. As always, you're welcome to share this. It'll be up on my Facebook page. It'll be up on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and my Rabbi Professor Jeffrey Wolf page on Facebook, which you are encouraged to like, because I put stuff all the time there. And I welcome your questions. I welcome your comments. I get wonderful questions, and the more the merrier. And we will see you next week. If you're on vacation, enjoy.